I'm Brian McCreath at Symphony Hall with Vladimir Yurovsky, who has returned to the Boston Symphony for the first time, I think, since 2012. It's great to have you back. Thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with me today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
This program built around Beethoven and Haydn, but there's one element that makes it not normal, and that is Carl Amadeus Hartmann. And I wonder, from your perspective, do these other pieces, the symphony and concerto by Haydn and the symphony by Beethoven, do they sound in some way different, or do we experience them differently because of this Hartmann concerto also on the program?
Most certainly, but I also would like to point out that all of the works on tonight's program are somehow different from what you expect the tradition to be. The Symphony of Haydn is one of the early examples of his symphonic output, and it's quite unusual, mainly in its structure, because it lacks the final movement. It's got the allegro, the adagio second movement, and the minuet, but there is no finale. And it's also unusual in that Haydn is deliberately quoting old church songs from the Book of Chorales. And the title of the symphony, Lamentazione, which, as far as I'm aware, was not given by Haydn himself, it came by later, has to do with its main theme, main theme of the second movement being a borrowing from the Book of Lamentations of the prophet Jeremiah, while the first movement is, according to some sources, is replaying the Golgotha story. So the symphony was obviously designed to be performed in the church, possibly during a Good Friday service. And so those quotes of the chorales and the generally oppressed tragic mood of the symphony, I think, correlates beautifully with the tragic mood of the Hartmann Concerto, who also quotes two songs, a church song, a chorale, a Husit Czech chorale for the God's Warriors, it was called. And then at the end, it quotes the revolutionary song from the times of the Russian Revolution of 1905, which is called Immortal Victims. So the first part of the evening is very dark.
But the second part is, by contrast, very light, isn't it?
The second part is very, very light. And again, there are interesting parallels between the two works. The concerto was written probably in the first year of Haydn's tenure at Prince Nicolaus Esterhazy's court. And it was written specially for Luigi Tomasini, the concertmaster of the orchestra, famous violinist and the composer himself. And the concerto is deliberately emulating the older type of solo concerto, which is basically borrowed from Italian Baroque sources, mainly Vivaldi. So here is Haydn playing with old formulas, filling them with new life. And in the symphony, we've got Beethoven trying to be a faithful successor of Haydn in taking over the symphonic tradition, but someone who also can't help bringing in lots of new ideas. In a way, it's an absolutely revolutionary symphony, many details which we can discuss now. But interesting is also that the main theme of the Haydn's Concerto's first movement is practically a literal quote of the second theme of Beethoven's Second Symphony's first movement. It's exactly the same sequence of notes.
That's fantastic. I did not know that.
It's a coincidence, but a lucky coincidence. When it comes to the Second Symphony, we're usually prone to describe it as vital and vivacious and full of mischief and youthful zeal and ardor. I can also sense there a real notion of struggle and even torment, because Beethoven was writing it in the year when he started losing hearing. And by the end of the year, the symphony was already composed, but by the end of the year, he wrote his famous Heiligenstadt Testament. So you could imagine the artistic invention was the only escape from his daily worries, sorrows, and troubles. But there are moments in the symphony when the pain is bursting through. In the opening introduction, there is a motive which resembles, it's almost a twin motive of the first theme of the Ninth Symphony, which was yet to be composed in, another 22 years later. And also in the coda, there's one of the features of this symphony are those incredibly long extended codas, which didn't exist in the Haydnesque or Mozartian tradition. He basically turns codas into a second development. And in those codas, you have an incredible sequence of chords which seems to be wanting to blow up the tonal system and go out into the open space of free atonality. And he does the same thing again in the second movement. And it feels as though it was more than just a healthy, youthful humor he was applying. It was a matter of life and death. I found somewhere a description of various composers trying to verbalize their attitude towards certain keys. Because you know that around 1800, the equal temperament hasn't broken through yet. And although the temperament was generally approaching equal, but the tonalities did sound differently. They still had the different amounts of pure intervals in them. And so when Beethoven was asked what D major was for him, he said three things. One was march, which is something you would expect from a D major. But the other two things were rather unexpected. One thing was Sehnsucht, longing. And the third thing was pain.
With D major?
Yes. So D major for Beethoven, particularly for Beethoven of that period, is not an easy key.
But that's really fascinating, because D major in other composers' works, I wouldn't think that at all.
No, and then if you look at Haydn's D major, look at the end of the first movement of the symphony, which we're playing in the first half, the Lamentazione. That's another highly interesting feature about that symphony, is that usually in the symphonies of that era, Haydn and Mozart equally, the exposition is always repeated, and then the developing section and the recapitulation are also repeated as a second chunk. So that comes from the Baroque A-B forms, where A was played twice and B was played twice. However, in this first movement, he only repeats the exposition because apparently, if you follow the events of the Gospels, at the end of the, well, it's actually not the end, it's past the recapitulation. So it is the golden, the point of the golden cut, following the Greek tradition. Between the first and the second subject in the recapitulation, there is something of a like a fermata, and then the second theme comes back instead of the parallel key. Here, the second theme comes back in the major version of the main note, which means from D minor, he jumps into D major, which is presumably describing the miracle of the resurrection. And because a miracle of resurrection can happen only once, he doesn't repeat it. So the first movement of this otherwise very tragic symphony ends in the most glorious D major. And I must say that his D major does sound like a divine epiphany, while Beethoven's D major is a victory hard won.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. What a great preview. Vladimir Yurovsky, thank you for taking some time to talk with me about all of it here today.
Pleasure.